Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's March 26, 2018. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway, another business week as well. We've got a good broadcast for you today. A little later in the program, Monica Chin will be here from Mashable.com. You're never going to believe what's happening with shopping now online and with Android devices. How about augmented reality to help you find that special something for your home? We'll talk with Monica about that a little later in the program. In a minute, we'll bring in our first guest this morning. The executive director of the American Dental Association is here. We're going to be talking about the business of dentistry this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the Dow futures are up almost 291 points this morning, as there are signs that perhaps there's not going to be a trade war, at least a serious trade war after all. Investors are optimistic that there are some signs of cooling off in the trade tensions. And so that's why we're seeing markets up 290 points. NASDAQ futures are up 110. S&P futures are up 35 points. Everything above a percent, and in the NASDAQ's case, up a percent and a half this morning. Around the globe, markets are generally higher in Europe as well, up a third in London, up a half a percent in Germany, and in France, up about a third. And in Asia this morning, markets also generally higher, with the Nikkei up almost three-quarters, 143 points. The Hang Seng is up almost three-quarters, 239 points. Oil is at 65, 62 a barrel, which is down about 26 cents this morning. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. New York State top elected official fiscal officer set to release his annual estimate of the bonuses paid to Wall Street securities industry's employees. The comptroller of the state of New York says he'll release the figures today. The annual accounting of bonuses paid to the securities workers serves as an indicator of how the financial services industry is doing. It also gives city and state tax collectors an idea of how much to expect from taxes on the billions of dollars in bonuses that Wall Street firms are paying employees. South Korea has agreed to further open its auto market to the United States as the two countries reach an agreement in principle on amending their six-year-old free trade agreement. South Korea's minister says the United States will lift tariffs on South Korean-made pickup trucks in 2041 instead of 2021. It'll also be able to export 25,000 additional American vehicles to South Korea without having to comply with domestic regulations. This morning, the trade dispute with China seems to be lessening, as I mentioned, with the markets. A top Chinese official has warned that a trade war would harm all sides, but has given no indication of Beijing's possible next move in the spiraling dispute with the president over steel and technology. Speaking to global business leaders at an economic forum, he says that cooperation to make economic globalization beneficial for all is an important step. He also says a trade war serves the interests of none. It'll only lead to serious consequences and negative impact. It is Monday. Our CEO Spotlight this morning focuses on the business of dentistry. Dr. Kathleen O'Loughlin is here. She's the executive director of the Chicago-based American Dental Association. Dr. O'Loughlin, good morning and welcome to the Opening Bell.
It's great to be here.
Lots of questions. We've not done a dive on dental since we've been doing this program, so we appreciate you coming in, and I hope you don't mind. I have lots of questions for you.
Be happy to take them on.
Let's start first with something that's been in the news recently here in Cook and even in DuPage counties. You've been meeting with the county leaders over the opioid crisis because of prescriptions that are given out by dentists that are maybe inflaming this crisis. Tell us about your conversations and why you've been having them.
We've been dealing with this crisis for about 4 years. We've actually been partnering with the American Medical Association on a grant, federal grant, to work on the opioid addiction crisis, and that's been 3 years ago. As we explained to the leaders of Chicago, we recognize the seriousness of this crisis. More people are dying of opioid overdoses than are being killed in car accidents every year. More people are dying of this than died of AIDS back in the early 80s, when billions of dollars was thrown at that problem. So what have we done? We've started educating our dentist members 3-4 years ago on how to prescribe intelligently, how to limit the dosage, how to limit the number of days they prescribe, how to recognize symptoms of addiction or drug-seeking behavior so they don't enable addicts and can hopefully direct people with addiction to the right resources to get treated, because it is a disease. It's not a moral failure. So we watched the percentage of opioid prescriptions written by dentists drop significantly in the last 4 years, and we presented that data. I would tell you I think the leaders in Chicago won't be happy until it's prescribed down to zero. And we this month in our Journal of the American Medical Association, we have 3 peer-reviewed articles on how effective non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are when used properly, are actually as good or better to reduce pain, acute pain from dental treatment, than opioids. Mm-hmm. And we're getting that word out to our dentists. So we recognize the problem. And as we were discussing a little bit earlier, this problem transcends social economic classes. We have dentist members who have lost children to overdoses. We have dentists who would be not with us if it weren't for a Narcan injection by someone close by. So this is not a poor problem. It is not a minority problem. It is an everybody problem. And we're doing as much as we can at the federal level and at the state and local level to address this crisis and reduce the risk to the population of becoming addicted. So I think I'm very proud of our track record, and we've been very aggressive. But as I said, the ultimate was saying, what else can you do?
Yeah.
We had 95 deaths last year, and that's unacceptable. And we agree.
We all think of dentists getting training to fill cavities and take care of our teeth. But what kind of training do they get to fight this area? What are you teaching them?
In dental school, there's requirements. All dental schools are accredited by the Commission on Dental Accreditation. There are requirements to teach pharmacology. This I taught for many years. This is a big item on their curriculum. And as they get into their third and fourth year of dental school, they're actually prescribing under the supervision of faculty. And they are exposed to emergency departments and emergency clinics where you tend to see a lot of acute pain. And so I think by the time they graduate and they have to pass a national boards and they have to pass a licensing exam, and many states mandate opioid training CE as a requirement to state licensure. And as of a board meeting just this week, we support that mandate. We support the need to educate dentists, young dentists, dental students, and mature, experienced dentists in how to prescribe, how to recognize addiction, and how to treat appropriately.
You mentioned earlier recognizing drug-seeking behavior. What is that?
People who suffer addiction are compelled to seek drugs. And withdrawal is a horrible experience, as I understand it to be. So they will fabricate incredibly compelling stories about why they need acute pain relief. And they will walk into a dental office and describe perfectly every sign and symptom of an acute dental abscess, where the dentist will actually sit down and do an exam. I had one patient years ago who was very compelling. It looked very authentic, who actually cultivated a broken tooth so that when she presented to the dental office, that was her reason. And this was before the age of drug registries, where you would have to put in, you know, your prescription into a database, which we support as well, by the way. But the pharmacist knew me personally, called me up and said, you know, this person has been to 11 dentists in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so that, I think that is, now that was 20 years ago. Now we have databases that are very helpful, where if you input your prescription, you can see immediately how many prescriptions have been written for that patient and what they were. And I think that's just a really good mechanism to monitor, because the drug-seeking behavior is extremely clever. And emergency department physicians will tell you, people will come in with very compelling stories that are credible. As a way to, you know, support their addiction. It's a very tragic disease because These people can be college educated, they can be employed, they can be high functioning. You can't make a judgment when you are dealing with addiction.
So. Let's talk about the industry generally. If you had to give it a checkup this morning, what would it be?
The dental industry itself?
Yes, yeah.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
Dentistry for years has been ranked one or two in terms of career choices by college kids. So to get into dental school, you have to do very well in college. You have to get about a 3.4 average.
Mm-hmm.
It's very competitive. There are about 66 dental schools in the country. At any point in time, there's about 22,000 kids in dental school. And when they get out, their career trajectories are very positive. They're in the top. You know, they earn a good income. They have tremendous autonomy. They can set a lifestyle balance that meets their needs. So a lot of women are entering dentistry now. That more than 50% of classes are women because they can adjust their schedule to meet the demands of child rearing and maternity leave and all of that. So it's a very, very top choice among high-performing college kids. And that hasn't changed in probably 15 years. The industry itself, there's about 200,000 dentists in the country compared to a million physicians. They have terrific training in terms of head and neck. They know more about the neck up than most physicians. So they're in a position to really contribute to the overall health of a community. There's been a lot of emerging evidence that disease in your mouth is associated with a lot of chronic diseases like heart disease, pregnancy, poor pregnancy outcomes, aspiration pneumonia, which is one of the leading causes of death in nursing home patients.
Mm-hmm.
It can be related to poor oral health. So the relationship between chronic inflammation and infection in your mouth has a direct correlation to a lot of chronic diseases that cause this country to spend a ton of money managing chronic diseases. Diabetes has the most evidence. So if you're a diabetic and you let your mouth get infected, your diabetes will be much harder to control and vice versa. Diabetes causes people to have significant gum disease as part of the disease process. So the connection between dentistry and medicine is getting closer and closer, and that's good for the public because you can't be healthy without a good, healthy mouth.
And two, in some cases, dentists are becoming first responders in the sense that they can pinpoint perhaps oral cancer and also sleep disorders.
Well, I'm glad you brought up oral cancer because it's an epidemic in this country. We're partnering with MD Anderson in Houston, which is a major cancer center, on cancers of the mouth and throat that are associated with the human papilloma virus. I don't know if you remember Michael Douglas getting on TV mm-hmm. a few years ago. He had throat cancer, and mm-hmm. it was HPV. HPV causes cervical cancer, but its association with throat and mouth cancer is relatively a new kind of phenomenon. It's 100% preventable, and we've had serious discussions with the Chicago public school system. And so how do you prevent it? You immunize kids between 11 and 13 with HPV vaccinations. It's two quick, easy shots during that adolescent time period, and they're protected for life. So it's 100% preventable, and we've had discussions with Chicago about whether or not this should be added to the mandated vaccination list for middle school kids. But it is an epidemic, and it's not just men or women. It's both, and we're seeing it in young, healthy adults with no symptoms. You know, 10 years ago, if you asked me about oral cancer, I'd say, well, don't drink and don't smoke. Don't drink alcohol and don't smoke. But now this is a whole brand new set of cancers hitting both genders and young, healthy people with no previously known risk factors. So,
yeah.
You know, we think it's a great opportunity for dentists to educate, first identify mm-hmm. the cancer, refer appropriately, and then to educate, especially if you're an orthodontist or a pediatric dentist, when you're seeing hundreds of kids for braces, you know, talk to the parents, talk to the kids.
Yeah, and 10 years ago, at my dentist, I would have never had an oral exam for cancer, and now that's part of my checkup.
It should be part of every dental checkup. And if it isn't, you should ask your dentist why not.
And then the sleep disorder, too. My dentist is always good at asking me questions about, do I know if I'm sleeping with my mouth open, having trouble breathing at night, am I grinding my teeth? I'm guessing that all those questions have to do with something with sleep disorders, right?
Yeah, sleep apnea is a problem that's often hidden from view unless you have symptoms. So dentists are trained to ask the right questions to find out, do you have undiagnosed sleep apnea, which can really impact your health? I mean, lead to high blood pressure, lead to fatigue, it causes, accidents, people falling asleep at the wheel and that sort of thing. Not every dentist chooses to be active in treating it. I think there are physicians, head and neck physicians, who treat it as well. There are oral surgeons who can treat it surgically if it's a problem with a jaw placement. But it's very common now that dentists see themselves as playing a much bigger role in oral health rather than just teeth.
Yeah.
They're doing much more than that.
I know the ADA recently adopted a policy that dentists not only should be like helping screen for this stuff, but even helping create the appliance for treating it.
Right. So ear, nose, and throat doctor physicians will often be treating patients. We like to collaborate with them. So they would make the diagnosis and then perhaps write the order for an appliance of some sort to reposition a person's jaw when they're sleeping so their airway stays open. And so we work with the physician community collaboratively. So if you need an appliance, dentists are expert at making those kinds of things. If you need surgery, you'll be referred to either a head and neck surgeon or a neural surgeon who are very well-trained in treating deformities that lead to, sleep apnea. Not being able to breathe when you're sleeping is a big problem.
Yeah. What's the checkup for patients here? Are our teeth now in this generation, are our teeth better? Are we healthier?
If you have access to care, so what does that mean? Well, if you are fairly well educated, if you have a job, if you have a dental benefit, if you have geographic access to a dentist, and if you don't suffer disabilities that keep you from there, and if you have money to pay for copayments, and if you don't have cultural barriers, those people have very excellent oral health. But if you have any of those socioeconomic determinants of health that interfere with your getting to a dentist, then you suffer a much heavier burden of disease than the people who have everything going for them. Mm-hmm. So if you're poor, if you live in a dentist desert, believe it or not, there are areas of the country where there just aren't any dentists. If you have language barriers, if you have disability barriers, it goes on and on. If you don't have any money to pay for out-of-pocket expense, because dentistry has more out-of-pocket expense than medicine does, you can really face significant barriers. And when we look at data, people who can't get to routine dental care have much higher burden of disease. It's higher in poor people, higher in Hispanics than whites, higher in blacks than whites. And even in Chicago, there are areas where poor oral health is the dominant trend. And you go into a community health center and you see a lot of people in their 40s and they don't have any teeth. And maybe 30, 40 years ago, one way to determine whether somebody was poor was how they dressed. Now it's their teeth. Mm. It is a very hard thing for people to get jobs when they're partially missing their front teeth or they look like their teeth are rotted. And so it's now a complex problem that's much more about what are the barriers to getting care versus oral health is totally supportable in preventive. You can prevent all oral disease if you can get somebody to a dentist.
I saw some statistics recently about the number of people who have dental benefits. 77% of the U.S. population has dental benefits, but I've seen anywhere from 25% to 40% of people who have those benefits never use them. They haven't been to the dentist in the last year or so.
Why is that? I call that group the invincibles. So we have the Health Policy Research Institute, which collects data. And we know that the boomers are the biggest utilizers of dental care. They're very loyal users. They go even when they retire and don't have a dental benefit through their company anymore. We've seen a tremendous increase in the number of Medicaid kids because of the ACA has really increased access for poor kids. So they've just they're on par with privately insured kids now. The group that's not going to the dentist are the young, healthy adults with a dental benefit. They've never had disease. You know, their parents have pretty good oral health. They don't go for two reasons. They either think they don't need to go, those are the invincibles, or they don't have enough discretionary spending to pay for it. You know, they'd rather buy a phone than pay for a dental checkup. So we are trying to encourage people to go see a dentist because oral disease is so preventable. So we're running a campaign now to attract that group to go see a dentist. We're building something called Find a Dentist, and we're working with CVS, the pharmacy company, to make oral health an important health issue so the pharmacists can remind people, you know, have you seen a dentist lately? You're on a medication that makes your mouth dry. We're hopefully going to highlight ADA-promoted products so people use the right products that really work. And we're hopefully going to get to a point where we can have someone who's in CVS buying toothpaste have a kiosk right there where they can go find a dentist in their zip code. No excuses, just get in there, make the appointment. And so we're developing that tool now, and it's being rolled out.
I know somebody who tells me he doesn't go to the dentist because he still hates the sound of that drill.
A lot of people have fear, yeah. But less so. I think there's better patient management than many, many years ago. So I would say the fear factor is number three compared to I don't need to go and I don't have money to go.
And not only that, I mean, the drill obviously is the worst case scenario. That's when you've not been for a while. But if you just go to get teeth cleans, they're using lasers now to clean your teeth. So you don't even have to use scraping as much.
Now, the
anymore.
Patient management stuff has gotten much better. A lot of practices now use virtual reality goggles and headphones and yeah. Some practices have warm towels for your hands, and there's a practice that I know of that offers foot massages while you're – so they're trying to make it very patient-friendly and very acceptable. The old days of scaring people, I hope, are long gone. We have a research facility in Gaithersburg, Maryland, that actually invented the air-driven handpiece, and they're working on an electric handpiece that doesn't make that – you know, there's always going to be noise, but a lot less objectionable.
That was going to be my next question. We could put a man on the moon, but we can't get rid of that noise. You've answered that question.
Well, a good set of Bose headphones and virtual reality goggles, and you could actually enjoy the experience.
One of the other things that's been happening at dental offices, and mine included, is there's a chair now for Botox.
Yes.
People are getting cosmetic things done right up while I'm getting my teeth cleaned.
Well, dentists are incredibly well-trained in head and neck anatomy. And so I think the fact that some practices are starting to offer cosmetic services that include Botox is kind of a natural outcome of the patients we see who really are driven by improving their cosmetic appearance. Because they don't have a lot of disease, they want to look beautiful. And I think some dentists really are doing a really good job servicing that need. It's not for everybody. I'm not, you know, I never was interested in providing that kind of cosmetic service because I was really busy treating disease when I practiced. Mm-hmm. But for those practices that want to make that their focal point, it's great.
You mentioned ACA earlier, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as it's also known, helping so many people. Has the ADA, I'm guessing you're still on alert to be a proponent of that law, or are you?
Well, we never came out for or against it. We wanted to wait and see the bill. Mm-hmm. The AMA supported it without ever seeing the bill, which was a little risky. Mm-hmm. It has done great things for kids in Medicaid. That expansion of CHIP and the Medicaid expansion through ACA has benefited a huge number of children who otherwise would not be getting care. So we like that. What we would like to see is some stabilization of CHIP funding, the Children's Health Insurance Program. That's kind of a gap filler for kids who don't qualify for Medicaid but don't have enough money to seek care on their own. It helps those parents tremendously. We would really like to see the gains in that area sustained. And we were very concerned about the reauthorization of CHIP that finally happened a few weeks ago. So we're kind of neutral about ACA other than we want to keep the wins going. This Congress and this administration is a little bit unpredictable, as you would probably guess. Mm-hmm. But we have a very, very effective lobbying group in D.C. that works very closely with the legislature and the regulators in really going after improving the health of the public is goal number one. And goal number two is to, you know, contain the regulatory burden on dental practices, because they're small business owners. And the burden of over-regulation can be difficult for them to manage. I mean, they're not like a hospital that can spread the expense of a regulatory mandate over $1 million or more, right? They're small practices that have trouble. So we have to do both. We have to protect the health of the public while we protect the interests of the dentist as a business owner. And that's where we are. So that's why we sometimes will hold back on a bill until we see the horrid detail. And then we will pick out those things that we like and pick out those things we don't like. And that's the basis of how we advocate.
On the subject of private dental insurance, are we headed for a time ever where that insurance is going to cover more of the cost of the things that we need?
Yeah, dental benefits was created as a way to retain employees way back when there was wage freezes in place and you couldn't offer pay raises to people. So, you know, dental benefits was seen as an employee benefit and that health insurance. So we're the only, well, as far as I know, we are the only nation that has an employer-based health care payment system, right? Mm-hmm. So the design of those payments was established back in the 60s. And to limit the expense for the employer, limits were set up. Like, you'll get 100% covered for prevention services. So if you're getting your teeth cleaned, that's covered 100%. If you need a filling, that's covered, you know, 80%. If you need a more expensive thing like a crown on your tooth, that's covered 50%. Then there's some stuff that the employer said, we just don't want to pay for, so we're not going to cover that. That design has not changed in 50 years, and it's way overdue for a new look. We've been talking about it, and we actually engaged PwC to help us rethink the design of dental benefits, because now I think there's a real need to address the limits have not increased while the expense of care has gone up. The limit of $1,000 used to be enough for my patients to have all their care taken care of. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago. Now $1,000 won't even cover a crown.
Yeah.
So we see the need to really modernize that. But it's an employer-based system, and the dental insurance industry is well established, and their customer is the employer, not the dentist. Not even their patients sometimes. So we're working with the industry to see if we could come up with a better idea.
Dr. O'Loughlin, wonderful meeting you. Great discussion. Please come back and join us again.
I would love to, and thank you for inviting us.
Dr. Kathleen O'Loughlin is the Executive Director of the American Dental Association. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. O'Loughlin after the bell and post our expanded conversation in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little later on this morning at WGNradio.com. You can find more about the American Dental Association at ADA.org.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. At a product event on Tuesday at Chicago's Lane Tech College Prep High School, Apple will introduce new low-cost iPads and education software in hopes of gaining some market share back from companies like Google and Microsoft, who have been increasingly focused on getting their tech into classrooms. City officials have ramped up graffiti removal efforts near proposed sites for Amazon's HQ2 over the past month, according to the Chicago Tribune. For example, the city completed 233 requests for graffiti removal in the Fulton Market area in the last month. It did just 14 graffiti removal requests in that area in the same month last year. And city officials released a video, narrated by William Shatner, that serves as a pitch to lure Amazon's second headquarters to the Windy City. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad you're here with us for our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Augmented reality-enabled shopping is expanding again.
This time, the furniture retailer Wayfair is introducing an augmented reality feature in its mobile app for Android that allow customers to visualize furniture in their own home. Monica Chin is a reporter at Mashable.com, is with us this morning. Monica, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. This is a really cool device, and I know it's been out on iOS for a while, but it's now on Android, so everybody can do this. It's called View in a Room 3D. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's part of Wayfair's mobile shopping app. It allows shoppers to place virtual furniture in areas of their homes. So it's an easy way to see how different furniture pieces will look and make sure they'll fit in your space before you buy it without ever having to go into any furniture store.
It's very cool because you can, examples they show here is, lifting your phone camera up to an empty part of the room. And then there's a chair that automatically appears there, and it looks like it's sized perfectly for the room. Tell us about who this is going to attract, do you think?
Yeah, so I think one group this is really good for is people who don't like live near a furniture store, people who might live in more rural areas, who might be ordering furniture, who might be ordering furniture online. I think this is a great way for them to, not have to send furniture back or to get a better sense of which pieces of furniture might be right for the space they're looking at. I think it might also just be great for, I think people who live in cities who may not be close to furniture, given that furniture stores are generally like massive places that wouldn't, aren't so common in places like Manhattan. But I think that generally this is sort of the way that retail has been moving for home goods. You see ads like Wayfair and Overstock, which are shopping apps that don't live in physical stores. And I think the rising popularity of those, as well as the rising popularity of these augmented reality furniture apps, which you can see from the fact that they, made a duplicate of the iOS app that they already had. I think that shows that this is something that people generally are looking for, and that they like being able to try and visualize furniture without having to leave their home and go to a furniture store, which is what you used to have to do to try these for yourself.
Yeah, this seems like it might even actually be better than going to the furniture store because, you get this, it's almost like you get the full display of your own home in that. I have to ask, is this going to be the new thing now for other retailers? Are we expecting others? I'm thinking IKEA, Target, other big online retailers, maybe Amazon, to get in on this?
Yeah, so funnily enough, they already are. IKEA has its own app called IKEA Place, which has pretty much the exact same feature. It actually has a couple more features as well. They have a feature called visual search where if you take a picture of a piece that strikes your fancy, the app will find you similar or matching IKEA products. And they also have a game where competitors pick and place virtual furniture around their house and try to guess where their teammates will place their furniture. Overstock has a similar app. Amazon has an app not just for furniture but for items. And I believe Target does as well, and eBay does as well. So this is definitely something that a lot of retailers are getting into. And I think in addition to not having to leave your house, for big things like furniture, I agree that there's almost more you can do with the app. You can, rotate stuff really easily. You can flip it over. You can change the colors automatically in some of these apps. And that's stuff you can't necessarily do in the furniture store. So if you have a space where, you're not quite sure what you want, it's a lot easier to switch really quickly between items.
I was going to say that the proof is going to be in the pudding here in terms of money, but Wayfair, they saw their revenue rise almost $4.7 billion in 2017. So they're doing something right. I wonder how much of that has to do with this forward thinking.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely the case. I think that places like Wayfair, places like IKEA, I think that people really want, we're seeing more and more that people really like being able to shop from the comfort of our homes. And I think we've seen that with the rise of voice shopping. For example, more and more people now are using Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant to just order stuff from their chairs. And I think that being, you know, finding innovative ways to do that has really been shown that these places more success and more popularity. And I think it seems like that's something that places are going to want to get in on if they want to compete with places like Wayfair and IKEA.
Is there a downside to any of this AR shopping?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't. I mean, the big thing is you don't get to sit to try actually sitting down on the product. So if it's like a chair or a couch, I do think there's an element of, you know, what's it going to feel like that you probably don't get with this app. So I think for pieces like that, it might this if I live near a furniture store, this might be better off used as like a preliminary sort of like which of all the like thousands of pieces that Wayfair has, which can I narrow down to a couple and then see if I can go try those. And I also think it could work the opposite way. If I go into IKEA and there are like six or seven that I really like, now I want to go home and try all those in the space I'm looking for and see which ones fit. So I think it, for most people, I would imagine who do live near furniture stores, I imagine it'll be used as a complement, to the in-store furniture experience for a place like IKEA. Especially if, people care a lot about the comfort.
Monica, good story. Thanks for the information too this morning and getting up with us here on the Opening Bell.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, Monica. Thanks. Monica Chin, reporter at Mashable.com. Make sure you head over there to read her work. Again, Mashable.com. This is AR, augmented reality shopping. The app, again, is called View in Room 3D.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, Dow futures are up 259 points. NASDAQ futures are up 93. S&P futures are up about 30 points. Everything above about 1%, and in the NASDAQ's case, up almost 1.5%. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Oregon Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we begin a four-day trading week, a lot of attention will be focused on the cattle market. After last Friday's monthly cattle on feed report showed an increase of a little more than 7% of cattle moving into feedlots in February compared to a year ago. They're blaming weather for it, persistent drought in the plains that took winter wheat grazing pastures out of the picture. And that forced beef cattle into feed yards in states noted for growing corn, such as Iowa and Kansas. So some of the analysts after the report on Friday said that live cattle could be down $2 today, and the placements, feeders could be down $2.50 to $3. Meanwhile, the grain trade will again be focusing on weather, but at this point, it's not going to be as big a factor as it will be later when we get into the planting season. Now, keep in mind, we observed Good Friday this week on March 30th, and that means government offices will be closed and markets will be closed. And so we are going to get the important end of March reports on Thursday rather than Friday. That means the quarterly pig crop report, the quarterly grain stocks report, and the planting intentions report will all be issued on Thursday because markets will be closed on Friday. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, March the 26th, 2018. No major economic reports today, but the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is due out, along with the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey. The early part of this week promises some new information on housing. Standard & Poor's releases the S&P Case-Shiller Index of Home Prices for January tomorrow. Also, the Conference Board releases the Consumer Confidence Index for March. On Wednesday, the National Association of Realtors releases its pending home sales index for February. On the earnings calendar, Lululemon earnings come today, BlackBerry on Wednesday. I'm sorry, Lululemon tomorrow, BlackBerry on Wednesday, GameStop and Walgreens Boots Alliances also on Wednesday.
on Thursday, Constellation Brands earnings. And again, as Orion said, on Friday, the markets will be closed for Good Friday. So busy week on the economic calendar, things that could move the markets as we push forward into the week.